the minute, but today it is the president and CEO of SunCube. And I'm going to go to the back row first because they're always the last ones to do it.
Hello, I'm Sheila Siri. I'm the head of government relations here at the University of Auburn.
Hi there, I'm Chantal Cleary. I'm the university's new co-manager.
Hi, I'm Janet Thayer. I'm an associate counsel for the University of Auburn.
Leanne Workola, chief of staff.
Christine Hale, chief information officer.
Jim Steller, provost, 1 month.
Dick Butler, undergraduate student
representative. Abhijit Bia, council member, the director of classification and compensation of the Department of Civil Service.
Pat Cornell, council member, and my day job is actually here in New York, so thank you. Love having you come to New York. I work for a small boutique investment bank that does workouts and restructuring.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Balachandran. I'm a council member as well, and I'm the owner of a new title company called Bell Road Title, which Sean's going to be sending me all of his business.
You're on the record.
He wants it on the record.
Cynthia Fox. I'm a faculty representative.
Steve Bettis, liaison to the council.
My name is Bryant Barksdale. I'm the Graduate Student Association rep.
I'm Nancy Burton, council member, and I'm a retired assistant deputy state controller in the retirement system.
Robert Jones.
We don't know you. We're in trouble.
We're all in trouble.
John Fallon. I'm a council member, and I'm a partner at Kay Scholler, which is a law firm. And again, thank you. Yes, this is great. Really appreciate this. Well, we can just walk over.
Yep.
I'm Anne-Marie Murray, I'm an alum, and I'm also the Associate Provost for Program Development.
Fadi Sanai, Vice President for Jamal.
Okay, great.
Michael, one housekeeping thing. Sure. Can you folks on the phone hear okay?
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes. Before we start, I know that late last week, I basically sent out the agenda and a whole pile of attachments, much more than we're used to sending. And I hadn't had a very good chance to basically walk them back to the agenda. A couple things happened. Some of you know, but some of you don't, I think. Joyce Van Zandt lost her mom quite unexpectedly late last week. And so Joyce, of course, had to be out last Thursday and Friday attending to family matters. She's doing fine. I went to the wake on behalf of the council, expressed our condolences. Secondly, all those attachments kind of came flooding in towards the end of the week. And third, I was laid up. So I was managing all this from home. So my apologies for just sending that stuff in one fell swoop. We'll do a better job if we ever have that many attachments again. But I wanted to apologize up front.
Thanks for that. And my apologies for not noticing.
That's because Terry did all the work behind the scenes.
Can we?
Hey, Mike, should we let the guys on the phone?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Guys, could you introduce yourselves, the folks that are on the phone?
Well, I happen to know
Jim Murphy.
We've got James Jackson.
Jim Murphy, I'm with the Alumni Association.
Jim Jackson, I'm retired and a member of the Albany Medical Center Board.
And Jim Clancy with the New York State Department of Health.
Great. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Can we have a motion to approve the consent agenda? Okay, second. Does anybody want to take anything off of the consent agenda? I'd like to take just a couple of minutes to talk about the Faculty Governance Council report. So with taking that off, could we approve the consent agenda? All in favor, please say aye.
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 There are no opposed. So we will then do the report of the president, and then we will take the item that was taken off of the consent agenda. Okay, so Robert, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, again, good afternoon to everyone, and thank you all, whether you travel from near or far. Thank you for being here for the council meeting. Steve has made it very clear that I'm supposed to be a bit more sippy than I've been in the past with my report, because we do have a very full agenda. And a lot of what I will be saying it would be somewhat redundant, but I just want to provide kind of an overarching highlight of where we are with some of the most important strategic initiatives that we have underway to try to transform this university. You're going to hear a lot of talk as we go forward about the new university at Albany, or helping us to reimagine the university at Albany, which I think is an important framework for us to all keep in mind as we think about where this university has been and where we need to go in the future. So I'm going to try to make my comments as brief as possible. And you've already met our new provost, Jim Steller. We're very, very pleased to have Jim. As he said, he's only been on board a little bit better than just about a month or so now. And I can tell you, based on the engagement and the ideas and his very comprehensive view and knowledge about issues on the academic side of higher education, I know he's going to serve as well as we partner to advance this university to the next level of excellence. So Jim, we're very, very pleased to have you. I think all of you know Jim. Spent some time at a little small institution called Harvard, and then he went to Northeastern as a dean, and then to Queens as a provost, and we were very pleased to have him to join us as provost on February 2nd. So welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
You're going to be hearing from him as we go along here. But let me also just start with maybe just an update on other kinds of staffing issue, because one of the things I've emphasized, and I think you all would agree how critically important it is to have a team of people around you in order to advance and to articulate a vision that's most compelling for the institution. And we're making slow but important progress in pulling that team together. And there are a few other transitions and searches that are going to be underway, but just wanted to give you an update of there are about six critical searches that are underway at this juncture. And all of these searches are in different stages of completion or progress. The Vice Provost for International Education, which Jim and I have been kicking around some ideas, we're probably going to maybe modify that position title once the person is hired. We're too far down the road to change it now. But we both feel that this position needs to not only have a strong academic focus, but it also needs to be the key person that's working with me to shape the broader internationalization agenda for the university. So we may very well modify that title either before or after the hiring process to be an associate vice president and dean of international whatever we're going to be calling it, because we think it's important for it to have that strong academic branding associated with it, as well as kind of more of a campus-wide vice presidential, associate vice presidential title as well. So that's the only change there. That progress is underway. The search firm, I think, is starting to pull together a list of candidates, and we'll expect to hear pretty soon about who the finalists or people that we're going to be bringing to campus for that search. The dean of the School of Criminal Justice and the dean of the School of Social Welfare, both of those searches are being ran concurrently, being managed by Jan Greenwoods and Associates, and I know my calendar is already starting to be populated with people that are coming to campus to interview for those two very, very critical dean's jobs. We are the search well on the way for the chairman of the computer engineering program, which I'll be talking a little bit more about in a moment, but and Anne Marie was going to give you more detailed information. But that's also a very critical hire, as we are moving very aggressively to start this computer engineering program. And just a few days ago, some of you probably received an email about the initiation of the search for Vice President for Communication and Marketing. I think that was a couple of weeks ago, I'm sorry. So that search is being teed up, and we certainly hope to have someone on board at least by June. This is a very, very critical hire, folks, because one of our biggest challenges is that, as you've heard me say, you're probably tired of hearing me say it, but I think it's true, we don't tell our story well. We don't have enough expertise in strategic internal and external communication. We have a web presence that really needs some help. And so this is a very critical hire for us, and Leanne Werkle is driving this search. and has done a great job for us in managing the communication and marketing unit during this interim period. But we've decided that we need strong leadership there, and we're moving ahead there. And one of our council members, Jim Clancy, who's on the phone, is serving on this committee. So thank you, Jim, for taking time out to be involved with that. We're also associate vice president for human resources as well. This is the position that Steve used to occupy.
I used to have it. Point.
And Jim Acluso is now in that job, and he's retiring and transitioning, so we're running that search as well. And in addition to those searches that are ongoing, we have preparing to launch a couple of other searches. Some of you may or may not know that Chris Hale, our Chief Information Officer, has indicated her desire to retire in June. And so we'll be fast-tracking that search to try to get someone in place before Chris rotates and out of this very, very critically important role. So Chris has done an amazing job for us, and she and I have been having conversation about the appropriate time to transition for probably about a year, year and a half now. And Chris, I'd just like to take this opportunity, I'm sure there will be others, to thank you for your service and your outstanding commitment to building a very fine office, information technology office, and we're going to be soliciting your input as we try to move forward to find a replacement for you. This office has done some amazing work, and the work on the new data center that we just opened up is, Chris put a lot of time and effort into that, and so I want to publicly thank you for that as well. And of course, as you know, we had a rotation out of our student success office. Chris Richard retired. Announced her transition. She officially retires next month, I think it is, but we have an interim person in that role. And so we're going to stay the course on with the interim appointment and that position for a while. We have Mike Christakis in that role. He's doing a very fine job for us. And we have so many searches on the table, we decided that this one can wait for a while, since we have somebody internal that's doing a great job. So we're not going to launch that search. We'll make a decision between now and the summer what to do about that search. I am not going to go through all the gory details, but just to remind you that we have a lot of opportunities on the table to really advance the university by making the university much more comprehensive. You've heard me talk about all of those initiatives, and let me just say, with the Reader's Digest version, all of these initiatives, including the College of Engineering and Applied Sciences, which is the next phase after we implement this computer science program. I've been very clear that we were not just talking about a single engineering program. That would make no sense for us to do. The real value added, when you look at what the needs are in this region, in this state, is for this public university to have a much broader, much more comprehensive academic profile than it has now. And we absolutely have to do that, folks. Otherwise, we're not going to continue to be the research-intensive university that we are today. I can't say it any more succinctly or simpler than that. This is not pie in the sky. This is very strategic. We will roll these programs out in a very thoughtful way based on faculty input, expertise that we garner from across the country, and what leading industries and others are telling us about high needs. Global Foundries, GE, everybody is telling us that we needed to start this computer engineering program. And so we're very, very excited about where that's going, and that's going to morph into a College of Engineering and Applied Sciences, and it's going to be probably based on a strategy of how we take one of our existing colleges and modify that to be basically the foundation for starting this College of Applied Science and Engineering, and you're going to be hearing more about that as time goes on. We're already starting to think out of the box about where this new college would be housed or where it would be initiated from, and we have this big idea about it potentially starting in this Schuyler High School that we have in downtown Albany. Everybody we talk to about this, they're just blown away with the notion that the university would build critically important school like a School of Engineering and Applied Science and put it in the heart of the city in a neighborhood that we know that the mere presence of this school, particularly if it connects to K-12, STEM education, can be very transformative to things that are going on, not only in that community with the nonprofit sector, but also with Albany High and other educational providers as well. And so that's the model that we will be pursuing. It's going to be a tough lift to get this done because we only need about $60 million to renovate Schuyler. In order to, but we think that we have a compelling argument. The notion is playing well with the few members of the legislative delegation that we've had conversation with. I talked to the mayor about it a couple of days ago, and she was ecstatic. She's very excited about this possibility. It's not a done deal yet, but that's the framework around it. You probably have heard now about a gift the governor gave us, and that's the responsibility for starting the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland and Cybersecurity. This is very, very exciting, folks. This is a big deal, something that's been worked on quietly for over a year now, started last legislative session, and we're very pleased that the governor decided to give this responsibility to you already. And the reason he made that decision, as far as we can tell, is because there was no other university, public or private, that had all the assets in one place to, number one, to do this extremely well, number one, to do it pretty rapidly, and number two, to do it in a way that would really add value and be structured in a way that is going to engage not just our expertise, but tap into other expertise where they exist in other public universities or private universities. And the model that we're talking about is kind of a hub and spokes model where Albany becomes the hub, and then there's these spokes out to other expertise that exists around the state. And another way I like to look at it is that you Albany will be the consolidator of the best and brightest programs and research and outreach and training efforts around the state, and do this in a way that is so effective and so integrated and so multidisciplinary that it will become the hub of this activity, not only in the state of New York, but potentially even the whole region. So where Jim is leading this effort, he's already starting to make some significant progress. He's convinced Dean David Rousseau to step temporarily out of this role as the Dean of Rockefeller College, because David has a lot of expertise and knowledge in this area. And we need somebody to just wake up each and every day thinking about nothing about how do we get this college up and running in the most integrated, most effective way fashion possible. And so we're very excited about that. We're as a part of this deal, you know, there's $15 million that was appropriated last year. And we're, you know, and the way things work in the state, once the money is appropriated, that means that you had it to spend. And so we're trying to get the reappropriation taken care of, as well as trying to resolve with the second floor and OGS and other places about where to physically locate this, potentially, and doing it in connection with the E-Tech building that you've been hearing about. And so we're proposing an idea, rather than building two separate buildings, because we only had $15 million appropriated for this new emergency preparedness building. So we've been voting the notion of re-siting the location, rethinking the location for the E-Tech building, and building a combined building on the Harriman campus with the 12 acres that OGS basically granted us about a year ago. So those conversations are ongoing as well. And so there's a lot moving parts here, folks, but we are very, very excited about this new responsibility. And I think it's another way to demonstrate the governor's interest in what we do and the fact that he sees value in this university and in helping us to advance what we do to the next level. I think these initiatives, these new college programs, is part of how we will resolve a challenging enrollment management issues that we have. We talked to you a little bit about that at the last meeting. And we know we're not just going to think our way and talk our way out of the challenges that we have. The only way we can resolve this, and it's going to take time, is by growing these new academic programs. You're not going to invest a more aggressive enrollment at University of Albany based on the current set of programs that we have. You do some incremental growth at the master's degree level, but these new ideas that we're talking about is going to be the place where we're going to get the most growth in the future. So stay tuned. You're going to hear more about that. And let me just close by sharing our conversations with Albany Law and all Downstate Medical College continue to be advanced. We're at a point now where you can expect, hopefully within the next 30 days or so, we'll be signing a letter of intent with Albany Law that we hope is going to lead to an MOU to do a formal affiliation with them, with the long-term goal potentially emerging if the data, if the affiliation experience over a year or two tells us that the next logical step is to merge. We decided that it would be not very practical for us to try to go from zero to 120 by going from where we are now to a merger as the first step. It's just not going to work effectively for political and other reasons. And so we're going to step back and go back to our original strategy of doing a deep affiliation where we can demonstrate value added from this two entities working together in a very seamless way. We remain very excited, and Albany Law remains very excited about this as well. You're going to be hearing more about this in the months ahead. Downstate Medical, again, that conversation is going well. It's going to be along the lines of aligning our academic programs and our research programs, I should say. And then the last thing that we're working on is this notion of big data, big data analytics. We had the second annual President's Forum on big data on Tuesday, and very well attended. This one focused on health analytics, and we're going to be using that conference, that forum, and the fact that we have this $32 million data center on our campus, as a way of trying to think about how you all really can take a leadership role around the issue of health analytics. And so there are going to be some interesting ideas and proposals that come out of that work as well. So that's as quick as I can do it, Steve. So
great job, Art.
You have to find me and I'll pay you next week.
Let's let Robert actually breathe. Does anybody have any questions, comments? That was certainly a mouthful. It was a couple of years of work that are being crammed into a very short period of time. Questions, comments, thoughts?
It's more of a statement. I know when we went back, harking back a few years ago when we were looking for you, we were looking for a leader to set us in the course and drive changes. And I'm, you know, sitting in New York, don't get to Albany as much as I used to, but it's just exciting. Not only just to read stuff that I'm reaching all the newspapers down here, but all the great things that the whole team is doing up there, but to hear it again echoed now. So, here, congratulations on this, and we support you.
Thank you.
To that end, especially for those that aren't in the Albany area, one of the things that Robert has done is to, I guess if you can picture it, open the gates of the university to the community. The university is so much more integrated into the Albany Capital Region community now than it ever has been before. Being a community person and being out there and feeling it from the other side, believe me, it is welcomed from everyone. So I think that is going to pay dividends for years and years and years to come. So I think it's a great one. Other questions?
Michael?
Yes.
It's Jim Jackson online. I'm just delighted to hear what the president said about the Schuyler School and coming back into the community. That's just terrific. So congratulations and thanks a lot.
Others?
As far as the college of emergency preparedness, is there a timeline for the online?
Well, it depends on what you mean online. We are very, very fortunate, and I think Jim, I'll ask Jim to come in if he wants as well, but one of the reasons I said we were chosen to do this is because we are, Rockefeller College and a couple of other schools, like the business school, already has a number of programs that fit very nicely into the curricular aspects of this. And so what we envision is repackaging some of those courses and actually being able to truthfully say that starting this fall, because the governor has made it clear he wants something on the ground by this fall. And so we're going to ask Jim to comment on that. But the actual facility and curricular pieces of this that involves rolling out undergraduate or graduate degree program is going to have to take its own path. And some of the stuff you can't rush. You just, because you've got state ed, you've got the governance structure at the university, you've got our own administrative processes. But we're moving as aggressively as we can, and that's one of the reasons we step back and try to rethink the facility aspects of this, because you know we can get a lot more bang out of $15 million that's added to an already approved infrastructure project that really makes a lot of sense to integrate into this E-Tech building than rather than going across the Harriman building a freestanding $15 million building. And this new college is going to be more virtual than physical. I want to emphasize that. It's going to be more virtual than physical. It's going to integrate across these different places of expertise across the state. And so we have to kind of rethink that as well. Jim, you want to
comment?
Well, thank you. We have existing programs already on the books that have words like cybersecurity, homeland security, and then we will simply stand them up in the fall and wrap them with advertising to make sure the governor knows that we are getting moving now. No approvals required, they're already in
right.
existence.
Right.
Then what we'll also do is begin to come out with our plan for how we're going to achieve the next step. We're working on a three-phase program, and phase one is to get these things up, to build an internal consensus, to talk about creating that hub the president mentioned. We're already having conversations with these folks. So our Risk and Ease Center came to us a couple days ago and gave us a presentation on what kind of training that's on the homeland, the emergency preparedness side. And then we had a visit yesterday from a Manhattan-based startup company that is interested in connecting us to virtual internships in places like the Bank of New York, Capgemini, Fidelity, which is in Boston. And we already have a lot of this happening in the real world right now in that new building in business. So that's the cybersecurity piece. So the theory was that if we had some things that we could throw out right away that would look real and are real, and then have the larger plan behind it, that would add up to satisfying the governor's demand, and then the building. So that's the plan. David Russo is leading it. Rockefeller College has been very cooperative, and it's starting to come out now in various ways, including this recent cybersecurity briefing, which is now a spokes and hubs piece. I can be happy. I'm happy to elaborate. It's exciting, and it's. I think it's going to be great soon.
Okay. Any other questions on that?
On the law school front, have there been more discussion at some point after the LOI is signed before the MOU? Because that seems to be what was discussed, right?
I'm sorry.
It would be. We have this LOI that's going to be signed, right?
Yes.
And then before the MOU is signed, is there going to be more discussion before that started?
There is going to be a considerable additional amount of discussion, because what we're doing now is we've been having these deep, engaged conversations with Albany Law and actually with their Board of Trustees as well. And over the past 2 months, we have gotten to the stage where we have involved some central administration. And now at the stage of making sure that the Board of Trustees for SUNY are also briefed on this. So at this juncture, I'm tentatively on the schedule to have some kind of conversation or interaction with the Board. And we're hoping that it's going to be an opportunity for me to articulate kind of what Rob just said about the overall vision for the university, what we're trying to do to really complete and roll out a more compelling vision for the new university at Albany, and not only talk about Albany Law as being one of those kind of key projects, but everything else that we're doing, the engineering, the big data analytics. And so that's what we're hoping for. But we're at a point where we have to brief the Board, because we don't want the optic that we're getting ahead of the Board of Trustees. Not that they need or they have any formal role, as long as we don't go any further than an affiliation. Now, if we start talking about merger, then that's a whole different can of worms, as you say. But it's something that we're willing to do if, in fact, after we get a year or two under our belt, it makes sense for us to do that, then I think we have to stand that proposal up as well. But the main thing is to make sure that once we, that Board of Trustees meeting is over, we have a strategy of going back to the university at Albany's faculty. We have already planned two open forums to make sure that the faculty have a chance to voice their opinion about what works and what doesn't work from their perspective, and to see if they have any ideas or concerns about this Albany Law affiliation. And this is all part of our effort to be transparent and to get the we already have had many faculty groups involved in this almost ever since day one. Sue Phillips and her new responsibility has been working with a group of faculty on the new joint degree programs that makes sense, that leverages our expertise, particularly across our School of Public Health, Social Welfare, the Rockefeller College. And I emphasize this idea with Albany Law, and I tell people now, I say this in all honesty, this was just about trying to sustain Albany Law as providing a JD program, we wouldn't be having this conversation. The real value added is how do we sustain the JD program, but also add those new value added legal education programs that reflect where the jobs are now and where the jobs are going to be in the future. Everything that we do is linked back to meeting the workforce needs and providing job opportunities for careers that exist now and careers that are going to exist in the future. It's not about maintaining the status quo of the traditional standalone JD program.
Robert, can you speak briefly about the council's role from a governance perspective in this whole thing and where we fit in or don't fit in?
Well, from my perspective, the council has a very critical role to play in this as we move to the next level of discussion. Because what we would bring back to you, for example, is once we, I won't get to you in the weeds on signing of a letter of intent, because that's basically just a non-binding legal agreement that we mutually agree that we're going to work and continue to work together. But once we get to the point of drafting an MOU, and the MOU will probably be framed around the prospect that Albany Law will start to work as a constituent college or school of the University at Albany. It will probably remain a 501c3 from the terms of the financial side, but then operationally, both in terms of academic issues, student affairs issues, student life issues, it will be probably very seamlessly integrated. That's the model that we're going for. And so that's the juncture at which we would want to come back, have a very deep discussion with the council, and seek your approval after we've had a chance to vet that structure with the governor's structure, with the faculty senate, and with the faculty in general. And we would come forward with an MOU. And the last step of this is where you would, not the last step, but you would have an opportunity to respond to the MOU. We can tweak it, but that's where I envision you would have some approval and oversight.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at.
I was going to follow up.
Because I read in materials that we were going to have some involvement at some point in time, which would be great. I think, as you know, some of us did go to Albany Law School, so that helps in the process. And some of us, like me, actually had degree programs that we had to create ourselves back then.
Right.
Where you had a degree from Albany, not undergrad, I'm talking about a postgraduate, and while you were in school at the same time, and we had to literally structure those things ourselves and negotiate with each as to which person would take what credits and things like that. Now it's much more formalized.
Right.
And it should be obviously taken to a higher level as well. I think, you know, in terms of our ability as a university to be a better university, you know, getting a law school, getting a med school, things like that, that would be a great opportunity to really increase our status. And we've always talked about this over the years, is schools like University of Buffalo has a law school. And, you know, people that have med schools or law schools and things like that seem to have higher rankings for obvious reasons. And I think that if we were able to pull this off and do this, I think it would really set us at a higher level.
Well, John, I agree, because from our perspective, it really is the only path forward for this university. And that's my message to the chancellor, to the trustees, and to the faculty, and to you as council members. If you're satisfied with the status quo, but even the status quo is not an option, folks. That's what I'm trying to tell you. The status quo is not an option. And don't get me wrong, I wouldn't have come here if I didn't believe that this is a fine university. But I took this job because it was very clear to me that the university is poised to move to the next level of excellence, and we don't have to think of ourselves as second class to Buffalo, Stony Brook, or anybody else in the state or the region. But we can't get there with the mix of academic programs that we have now. We will become a different type of institution in 5 years than we are today if we think the status quo is going to go. The status quo is not going to move us. And that's the reality that I've come to. You only have to look at the challenges that we have in maintaining enrollment and then digging down and finding out why we're having trouble when our peers aren't. It's because they have the programs in these high demand, high need areas that young people want and where the jobs are now and where they're going in the future. And if we have to be a part of that, and we have to align ourselves with that framework if we are to move this university forward. And that's why it may seem like we got a lot on the table. Yes, we do. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it. But these things take an enormous amount of time. And I keep reminding people, we're starting with computer engineering. It will be a decade before we are able to build a school of applied science and engineering that RPI or anybody else is going to have to worry about. It's going to take that time because we're going to do it in a very... It's not about just generating opportunities for new undergraduate students, as you're going to hear from Anne-Marie in a minute. This is about building a world-class school of engineering and applied science by starting very thoughtfully with computer engineering and then thinking about whether the other niche engineering degree programs that will set us apart from the rest of the engineering schools in the state and in the region. We're not trying to copy Stony Brook, Buffalo, and Binghamton. That's not the model there at all. It's about how do we create programs that are different operationally and programmatically and strategically than what's out there. So,
and we absolutely need that, given the demographic issue that is facing us.
Yep.
There are going to be some lean years as the demography goes in one direction and this goes in another. You know, one would think that if you talk to Drew, the president of Hudson Valley, you know, Hudson Valley's community college is significantly different. But normally, their enrollment would be peaking, especially given what's happened in the economy. And they have been on a steady decline, not because of not having quality programs, not because of not having quality staff, but just from demographics. So this innovation is actually long past due. So I'm thrilled that you're doing it because we're going to need it. There's no question.
I just wanted, I guess in the short term, where you could be supportive if you felt comfortable, we could circulate the letter. We are asking legislators in our delegation to support these continued conversations with Auburn Law School. So we have a support letter and we're also going out to regional people in our region to support us. And it's a letter that we send to H. Carl McCall as the chair of the board, and then also the chancellor. So if that's something that I could send through Steve, and if you felt comfortable, if you wanted to do something jointly or to do individual letters, that would be a terrific help in the short term.
Why not?
Sure.
I was going to. I think these initiatives are good, and I think one of the things we need to think about too is, and I liked what I heard on the emergency preparedness, is some of this is repackaging, because I think, you know, when a kid today, it's no longer good enough to just say I want to be a chemistry major. You've got to be saying, you know, they're thinking. I mean, I think they're thinking a little bit differently, and maybe what they really want to be doing might actually be something like IP law, and so they want to be in a program that it kind of like. And I was thinking of this the other day. We had a student from Albany in the who was actually out of the chemistry department, which was probably was on my brain somehow. But he liked crime novels and thought he was, you know, was completely into crime stuff, and so, you know, he was attracted to criminal justice and so forth. But he realized he really needed to know the science behind crime first and foremost. So he switches into chemistry, and he's pursuing sort of forensic studies in a way, but from the chemistry science angle. Mm-hmm. So, but it was the fact that he could marry stuff from this college over here and this college over here that made sense. And I think when you look at, when people are talking, I was looking at some of the challenges that they were listed in the, you know, the grand challenges in the mm-hmm. engineering memo. Mm-hmm. They're interdisciplinary. They are not, and we're not necessarily organized nor packaging ourselves in line with, say, solving the brain challenge. I mean, there's probably a lot of students who would be interested in the concept of neuroscience or the brain, solving, you know, understanding the brain. So how do we create, taking all the stuff we've got today, but packaging it in a way for students to study the brain? And I think, and so that's why I thought, I mean, I think the emergency preparedness idea of marrying different things is good, but I think we need to be looking at it across the board, and maybe it's a it's really reshuffling the deck in a lot of ways. I mean, I think that, you know, we've got the ingredients, we just need to mix it a little bit differently.
Yeah, I just want to say from a student perspective, over the past 4 years, you can really feel the change happening, and you know, these new things are just going to add to that. But you can see the change. You can see the new business model. You can see the football stadium. You can see people going to these basketball games and football games. And so from a student perspective, keep building on that to advance this university, you can really feel the change from what it was 4 years ago to what it is today, and what it, I imagine, will be 4 years and 8 years away from that. So great job, and let's keep moving forward.
All right, I'm going to keep us moving. I want to just briefly take the faculty governance report off the table. Somebody just make that motion to approve.
So moved.
Second. So I was taken with this report. I thought this was a great report. And for those of you that are writing the reports, I think this is
a... Hey, Michael, give me a second. Could I ask the members that are on the phone to mute your lines? We're getting some feedback here. Thank you.
I think this is an effective way to communicate back to the council and keep us up to date. I'm particularly interested in our role in the governance process. So I saw some really interesting reports that were identified here that are happening, that are being discussed, the critical items to the university. And do we ever have a role? Does the council ever have a role in some of these things? If you look at the report, there's the Blue Ribbon Panel on the adjunct and contingent faculty. There's the one that follows with graduate school compensation, and the one that follows that. And I'm just wondering, do we have a role at some point, whether it's even just an informational role, or this, that role? So that as I'm trying to understand the overall governance of the university and where the university council fits into this process, I'm thrilled that this is what's happening, that this is going on, and it seems like, you know, it's called the governance council. So as I was reading the minutes and I was seeing the word council, and I was wondering which council, is it the governance council, is it this council? And I'm not trying to fit us in where we don't belong, so it's really a question of where do we belong in some of this information? And I don't know who I'm posing that question to, because I don't know who has the answer. And maybe this is something that we can take up for another meeting. Maybe we can make this as a topical issue. But these seem to be very fundamental and critically important elements of the university that are being debated here. But they kind of go right past us. And I'm not sure if that's by design, that they're supposed to go past us, or if we should. I mean, you could make an argument that any one of these is a topical matter that we should be discussing as the university council, and I'm just not sure. Did anybody else read it that way? Did anybody else have that question, or am I just too much time on my hands?
Well, let me just say that the governance council is the governance council of the university senate, and I am the vice chair of the university senate, and I chair that council. And so I'm glad that you asked this question, because I think that the relationship between the University Council and the Faculty Senate, the University Senate, is not clear. I sit as the faculty representative. I really had no idea what my role was supposed to be. I wasn't really sure whether I was supposed to be reporting on the Senate as a whole, or was I reporting on what the Governance Council was doing. The Governance Council has been very active. So there was plenty to say just in what we've been doing. I don't, in all of my years as a faculty member, I have never really been aware of what the University Council did. I think that the Senate would welcome a clarification of what that relationship is. As I was coming down here, I was thinking about, you know, what do I report back? I don't think that faculty representatives have reported back to the Senate basically what's happened at these meetings. I think they go, but don't really. So I think this is a great conversation.
From an overall governance perspective, we should be integrated.
Mm-hmm.
The
problem is the statute is really lame. I mean, if you've ever read it, it really doesn't articulate at all what we can do, except it's very clear about what our role is with respect to a new president, but it has no other real teeth to it as far as what happens. And my understanding is that at most universities and colleges, it's one of those things where it evolves based on the chairperson or
and the president
itself and the president and how that all interacts. And having been on this council for longer than probably anybody here, I can tell you that it has evolved up and down over the years, depending on, frankly, who the chairperson is and who the president is. And you and I talked about this when you first came, and I thought we should be more active and stuff like that. But some presidents, and people I think know who I'm talking about, not the past president, but the one before that, was not that the council had that much involvement. And, you know, it changed. It really does. It has evolved over the last many years that I've been on the council.
But I think New York State is different than a lot of other places.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people ask me all the time. Like, so
I compare this with, I have friends board of trustees and stuff at other universities outside of the SUNY system, and it's a completely different thing. But I agree with you, John.
Even publicly, public ones.
Oh, absolutely public ones. I mean, very similar, but not the same at all. But it ebbs and flows. I mean, there was a significant interaction during, say, the search process.
Right. Well, that one's pretty well defined. But
I mean, that was like...
That is the only thing that is defined.
Right.
And huge.
So I guess what my suggestion is that we, and again, not here, not now, not today, but that we define and create a role, clarity and collaboration where you would want it. So, you know, the minimum standard is what is in the statute, and we clearly have to do that. And then we want to take the guidance, really, Robert, from you is to, you know, how do you want us to work together? Because if we're not going to, it should be clear that we're not going to, as opposed to you wondering what you're supposed to say and me wondering if I'm supposed to say anything back. Mm-hmm. It should be articulated. It only makes sense that the role of clarity be done that way. So why don't we just move this for now to a topical issue for another board meeting and ask Robert and Steve in their spare time to come back to us with some kind of facilitated discussion to figure out how we can actually document what those, what the role and the relationship should be. But in any event, I'd love your report. So with that, can we just finish that and all in favor of approving this report, say aye, please.
Aye.
Okay. The update on institutional plans to establish the computer engineering program.
Anne-Marie Murray.
Can I
change my seat?
You sure can.
So I put some graphics together for you to kind of help you put your head around what is happening with this program and what this program is all about. And Patricia, you are right on the money. Multidisciplinary engineering programs are it.
And introduce yourself first, though. And tell
thank
us.
I like it already.
Yeah. I want you to make sure you understand how fortunate we are to have this. It's very talented administrator, former university president to be a part of our team. So tell us a little bit about your background.
My background is that I am a mathematics teacher.
I was a math major.
Isn't it the best? It's the best job.
Oh, my God.
It's the best job. So the majority of my career was 20 years in the classroom. I taught engineering science, mathematics. I was at a community college, and so I taught anything else they wanted me to teach. And just to give you a sense of what it's like to teach at a community college, on one Friday afternoon, I had four classes in the row. I went from pre-calculus to Calc 2. To arithmetic, to differential equations. Now, if you don't think that is a sense of what happens with faculty at a community college, that kind of sums it up for you right there. I was fortunate enough to move into administration. After the turn of 2000, I was chair of the engineering science department at Hudson Valley. I then moved on to administrative positions at Hudson Valley, where I took on more responsibilities. I finally left the classroom in 2003. It was brutal, but I brutal school, but I did it. I was the dean of engineering technology and business and industrial technology for several years before I moved to an executive position as the provost vice president for academic affairs at Broome Community College in Binghamton. And after 3 years there, someone said, you should probably try and be a president. And I said, oh, I don't know. And they said, apply and you'll find out if you want to do it or not. And lo and behold, I applied to Herkimer County Community College and was offered the position. So I had to make a real quick decision, and I spent 5.5 wonderful years there developing programs, one of which was an engineering science program, and just moving that campus forward. I'm very proud to be a member of the State University of New York. I started in 1981 as a part-time adjunct faculty member. And I'm here now, back to my alma mater, the University at Albany, and thrilled. President Jones, thank you so much for your leadership, because he did such a great job in his report giving you the background on this. But I don't know if you know the whole story, so I'm willing to tell you the whole story. And then I'm going to tell you all about how this one particular program is going to tie into where we're going next, how we're going to get there, and what it's going to look like. Okay? So stay with me for a minute. So I have a... Where am I going to do? Right here?
Earlier.
Space bar? Okay, thank you. It all began in 2013 when President Jones was here and he talked to Peter Bloniarz, the then dean of the Computer and Information Department. Peter and the president decided that what we needed was an engineering program, and it would be in the College of Computing and Information and would look like a computer network engineering program. Because of the success of that program at Hudson Valley. But it is a network program. It's Cisco certification. It is a technical program. And so after we applied for the high needs grant, we got the funding, we were able to get some consultants in. The previous provost put together a strong team of faculty from computer science and physics, and we talked about what it should look like. We made the decision, a really critical decision in February 2014 when I started, that we should go into computer engineering. All right, so it's a very confusing area. There's all sorts of things that happen. So why did we pick computer engineering? Because of what was given here at the university. What was given here at the university was strong computer science with enrollment blooming and busting, a solid mathematics department, a very strong physics department still. And so we needed to recognize that if you're going to talk about engineering, it is a highly rigorous academic program built on the foundations of mathematics and science. Engineering's an applied discipline. Engineers build things and they solve problems. All right, so based on that, we realized where it would go, and it would go in CCI, because we were bridging a gap there. So I want to talk to you about a gap that is part of what computers are. And everybody understands that a computer plugs into a wall. Nobody recognizes that it's an electrical unit. It is a highly electrical unit. It is circuits. It is resistors. It is electricity flowing through a board at different rates. And it is the managing of those rates that allows us to capture, store data, and process it. All right? In order to do that, you need the hardware of that computer. But in order to make the hardware work, you need the software. And so there's a myriad of languages that talk to the hardware. The most basic one is actually assembly language. It takes code and it talks to the hardware. You do this, you do that. You turn on, you turn off. That's how it works. Okay? Nobody talks about what exactly that separation means academically, and it means two strong programs. It means a program under software, which is our computer science, and it means a program under electrical engineering, which is the hardware piece. Guess what we don't have at the university? So what kind of an engineering program can we put together? And we said, how do you get from software to hardware, and what does it look like? And it's a continuum. It isn't discrete. It flows. So there's all different levels between the software and the hardware. And what we found was that our computer engineering program could be built to fit between there and bridge that gap. Now, the thing about computer engineering is the gap's pretty big, and every program across the nation defines it differently. So basically, what you have is this continuum, and you have a program that can either move to the left or the right. So were we faced with building a program that could do that, that could put it right in the middle, capitalize on the software, the hardware, and either have students move towards what they liked, whether it was programming or whether it was actually getting down and dirty and soldering and creating a computer. All right, so here's where it So here's where this program right now is important. Number one, it's what industry wants, because engineers do work on teams, and teams need all the components across the continuum. Our graduates will be in great demand because they can talk to the computer scientists and they can talk to the electrical engineers. And so industry wants them on that team. How do we know that? Because when we built this 120 credit hour program, we talked to industry and we talked to educational partners. We talked to ABET, the accrediting body, and we built that program within the constraints of our industry information, comparable programs at other institutions. Our flavor is going to be closer to software because of our strength. And so that's what our program is going to look like. It contains all of the requirements that the university has for its students for graduation, as well as all the general ed components that SUNY requires. It also meets the transfer path, and lo and behold, you got a community college person, so those articulations were the first thing that I looked for, because we're going to get those transfer students. Okay? Where do we take this from here? How do we bounce off of this? It is so easy for us to leave that computer engineering program, which is an undergraduate program, and with the right faculty, develop graduate programs in computer engineering, or move to software engineering, or move to a higher hardware electrical program, which is electrical and computing engineering. Now, schools of engineering are built on four pillars. Electrical, mechanical, the most popular, chemical, and civil. Look at what happens with civil. It is concrete and it is high footprint, high expense. Mechanical, high footprint, high equipment expense. Electrical, maybe not so bad. Chemical, maybe not so bad. And so we had to start looking throughout the university to see what would happen. All right, so that is really how it fits. And it fits really well into what we have. I'm going to tell you that where it's going to live is in the School of the College of Computing and Information, and we hoped to create a fourth department in that school called Computer Engineering, and we're in the process of understanding how we can do that. It doesn't happen too often, or hasn't happened in a long time. So that's going to be a problem for us to see. How do we get our shared governance, right? All in agreement that this is a good thing and let's go forward, all right? So that's what it's going to look like, and that's where it's going to be. So I have heard at least three times in this discussion, this new program, but it'll take a long time. That new program, but when will it be? When is it going to be on board? And our provost said we'll get to that as soon as possible. I thought this group might like to see how a program is born and how it gets approved. And what is that process? I think it will serve you as we look at the kind of growth that we're talking about at the university. So I'm going to start with this. There's an internal process, there's an external process for approval, and the internal process is time-consuming. You'll see why in a minute. And the external process is even more time-consuming. We'll explain that in a minute. So what happens with the internal process is we start at the department level. And the seed comes from a faculty member. We have to tell SUNY we're thinking about this. Communication to SUNY. SUNY has to tell the entire system, guess what UNAlbany's thinking about? What do you think of that, folks? So we have a 45-day delay to get a response from every other SUNY campus as to whether it's a good idea for UAlbany to have a program. In the meantime, the faculty are putting together the application, which requires pages and pages of confirming with all the requirements, making sure that we have the right faculty, the facilities, the money, the whole ball of wax. All right? As soon as we do that, SUNY says, We don't want to hear you tell us it's great. We want somebody who you don't know, who isn't in the system, who isn't part of SUNY, who doesn't even write a book or have a grant with anybody associated with this college. We want that external person, two of them, to come on board and say, this program's great. And you know what? We're not even going to let you pick that person. You send us four names, five names, and we'll tell you which ones we think are okay. So think about the time that this is going to take to go back and forth to get those external evaluators. Then you got to get them on campus. We had a unique situation with computer engineering. We had no faculty, no PhD faculties in computer engineering. We had one visiting professor with a bachelor's degree in computer engineering. Okay? So we had no expertise. We found the expertise, and thanks to the grant, we were able to bring in some consultants. But more importantly, we did our homework. We looked at IEEE, which is the engineering standard, gold standard. They had done a major report in 2004 on the guidelines for a computer engineering program, told us exactly what should be in the program, and when we mapped it out, 70% of the items they said had to be in the program, we already had on our campus. So we were able to put together a curriculum that used all of this. 20% of the curriculum comes from computer science department, 20% comes from the math department, 15% from the physics department, and another 20% from the computer engineering. Throw in the rest for gen ed, you get up to that 120. There's 12 credits that are electives that are going to allow that student move from left to right on that continuum with existing courses and new courses that we've built in computer engineering. So we're still in the department, and we can't get out of the department until the curriculum committee says okay. We had a curriculum committee that had no computer engineering expertise. So it wasn't easy, and we had to work together with the dean, but we had these two evaluators who happened to be, looking at my time, who happened to be top ABET accreditators in the nation who came to the school and loved it because they weren't the hammer now, they were the helper. So that happened. Moved to the university level once the dean approved it, went down through the university policies committee, which says, do we want this? Can we afford it? The UAC, which says, does it maintain the integrity of our academic programs? And then on to the Senate. Okay? We're between, we've approved by the UAC back in December unanimously, and we're waiting for the Senate to take a look at this program. Once it does, the Senate's going to send it to the President for the approval. The President's going to send it to the Provost. And Jim, you may not know, but you're going to sign a wonderful letter that's going to put it right in the hands of SUNY, and then it's going to run right down through that. That's the program approval process. When did it start? With a seed in 2013. We can expect approval in the spring of 2016 if it makes it through. It's a long process. Timing on this. This June, we'll put a new chair in place. By August, we will have three assistant professors in place with strong research agendas to match where we want to go with this. In the fall, no student can register for a program that doesn't exist or hasn't been approved. However, the first 2 years are all existing programs, so we're bringing those students in and getting them ready for when it's approved so they can matriculate. Our students don't matriculate until after their first year anyway, so it works quite well. No advertising, no marketing. SUNY and SED won't allow it. My phone rings every day asking about this program. Yesterday, we were at the Professional Engineering New York State Conference, and people wanted to know what's happening at Albany. This is going to be really quite good. Okay? It'll take us, once we get that approval, we market. We're already working with admissions. We're going to have a cohort, strong cohort, of incoming freshmen and transfers in the fall of 2016. That's computer engineering. That's what it looks like. That's the process. Questions about this process, because it applies to every single new program that the president wants us to create.
Yes? I have a question about the process. incidentally, I just drank a gallon of the Kool-Aid, so I'm in.
All right. That's my right gun. You're right behind me.
From an output perspective, and talk about the employers and the real right. Ultimate. I'm a kid, 18, 17 years old. I get lucky enough to get into school. I graduate. What are my job prospects? I'm competing against Clarkson, RPI guys, MIT.
That's right.
What tranche, where am I going? Okay. Am I going to go to grad school? Am I getting one of those jobs?
That's right.
What's
okay. So the story with is there are jobs galore in a computer industry. All right? A computer engineer.
And how much am I making?
Oh,
well,
oh,
you know what?
Right.
Let me. I can even.
You can answer that.
Because I was going to have a question and comment.
Okay.
Kind of goes along. First of all, the comment is, I don't know. I mean, when I go onto the internet, if you go onto Internet Explorer, you come up with your MSN little headlines. Within the last week, top 15 paying jobs out of college. 13 of the 15 are engineering, as I recall. Mm-hmm. Maybe 14. I'm not quite sure. And one of them was computer engineering. So right off the bat, if you're not in the engineering game or the applied science game, you're not.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where the top jobs are. But my second question was, and this gets to your what about RPI and so forth.
Yeah.
I don't really know exactly how ABETS works. That's the accrediting organization. Mm-hmm. Will they accredit a program or do they accredit a college?
They can do all sorts of things. Right now, we want them to accredit this program, and in order to do that, we've built in their requirements from day one, baked it in right from the start.
I think getting that accreditation is important.
Right. We can't apply for it until our first graduating class.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the key.
Yep.
All right.
You
but
can't
still,
apply until you graduate
that's
the
right,
first
because
group.
Because at the end of the day, you want to be, if you're going to be in the game, you want to be at a school that's accredited.
Okay. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Could you circle back to Robert's question, though?
Yep. Okay. So right now in the packet that went to the State University of New York and will go to the Senate is a letter from IBM. And in the letter from IBM, it says, presently on our website there are 500 jobs that your graduates could be eligible to apply for. All right. Vicarious Visions, which is a local spinoff off of an RPI incubator course, is a software company. Everybody's heard of Guitar Hero, right?
Mm-hmm.
20% of their employees are computer engineers. The letter from their president that's in that packet says, we appreciate the program that has been developed and the skills that are embedded in this program will serve future employees at our organization. Same similar letter from Kitware. Okay, so what we've done is we've gotten those to be partners. Why? Because we want our students to have some place to go for an internship, and we want our capstone courses to not be fake programs, fake problems in a book that have the answer at the end of the book. We want ambiguous, real-world problems that our students are solving, and we want them tied to industry, and we've started those relationships so that when the time comes, we're ready to go. Does
great.
That answer your
no,
question?
Just,
yeah.
That's
so simple,
that's
but so
that.
Smart. All the private sector people understand that. Just come ask us. We'll tell you what you want.
I will tell you.
Kids, you're like, that's completely wrong. You're going to ignore that.
Yep.
I'm going to spend the time to retrain you another year and then
look
away. But that's great.
They came to us. We met with them, I don't know how many times in the summer, because we met almost every week to do this. They came to us and said, we don't like that course. That course doesn't mean anything. What we want them to learn is this. We fixed it. There it was. We changed that curriculum, I don't know how many times, based on what they said. By the way, there's a letter in that packet from GE. And GE says the same thing. This community needs a public higher education program in engineering, so our brightest and best do not leave to go to east, south, west, etc. All right?
The public option piece of this is huge, folks, mm-hmm. and that's why we've been pushing
exactly
for it.
Right.
I think, Anne-Marie, you have another letter from another entity or some.
We have a letter from RPI.
Yeah,
we have a letter from the chairman of the computer engineering program at RPI who says he looks forward to our graduates to go to their graduate school. He looks forward to working together with us. He thinks this is an incredible opportunity for faculty, administrators, and for the region.
Wow. And I'm curious, so when we start, since given that it's at least a three-year process that we see happening here, are we starting on Kemi and EE in the next year or so?
We're going right there.
Because Kemi is going to be is one of those hot areas.
All right, so here's what's happening. Those next steps have already been worked on since March
We had the consultants talk to them. Actually, if you look at the SUNY Board of Trustees resolution in March of 2013, they give the university direction to move into niche engineering programs in terms of the president's areas that he's identified, and it actually mentions that computer networking engineering, which we kind of supplanted with this. All right, so what our next steps are going to be in the area of, we're working off of our strengths here, the biology department, the chemistry department, the RNA Institute, the cancer institute. What is happening here? We already have had talks with Downstate Medical, who wants to work with us to create an engineering program for graduate students. They want to collaborate with us. They've got plans, and they like the idea of working with us. Mark Stewart, who is the dean of that program, has been talking to us about what our next steps will be. Our biological people are looking at what are our strengths. Now, everybody says biomedical. Biomedical is arms and legs, and it belongs with a hospital. We don't have that. So what we're looking at is what we do have, which is tissue synthesis and regeneration of organs. That's huge. It's just the future. And so if we can take the research that's being done in our biology department, our chemistry department, the RNA Institute right now, throw in the givens. By the way, folks, the givens haven't changed. The biology's here, the math, the physics, right? So that's going to happen. And I have to throw, because I'm a mathematician, I have to throw some kudos out to the math department, because they're very theoretical here, and this is a hugely applied area. They actually created a special course just for this program and other science programs. It's called Probability and Statistics for Engineers and Scientists, and a totally applicable program. I'm thrilled about that, because that's going to serve this program and every other program that we're going to have to create.
And your big data. I mean,
big data.
We ought to involve them in big data analytics.
So the ones that SUNY talked about was biological, and I put them in there for you in that report, environmental, healthcare analytics, and whatnot. In the process of deciding where we wanted to go in engineering, the School of Business, I went to visit them, told them what was going on. They said there's two ways we can help. One way is we could take a look at financial engineering. Since 2008, the number of engineers in Wall Street has skyrocketed. Who knew? There's a whole field there.
Some of us knew.
Right, some of us knew.
Same with physics, same with physicists.
Yep. They are very excited about looking at this. Issue with all of these programs is, will ABET accredit it? Because SUNY will not approve a program unless it's ABET accredited. So some of the work we've done this past year was to make sure we could get any one of these programs approved by ABET, and they're working with us and said, yes, you can. You have to follow these rules rather than these rules. So we're set with that. Environmental is interesting because environmental belongs to ESF in the SUNY world. And so we're looking at alternate names for that. But between the climate work that's being done in atmospheric science, the kind of work that we have in chemistry and biology with the biochemists, the molecular chemists, and whatnot for the water, and some of the new hires in Atmospheric Research Center in energy, we think these three things in terms of sustainability or resiliency can be formulated to create an engineering program. So that's what we're talking about there. Analytics in healthcare is moving towards policy and Rockefeller Center, and also with CCI as far as computing. Engineering doesn't fit as well here, and you know why, because the health analytics programs aren't interested in calculus 1, 2, 3, and 4, right? And then financial engineering, they are working on that. So that's where we think we're going to go, and where we're going. We are open to all sorts of things. The president just had a discussion on packaging. We've had a discussion on all sorts of different kinds of engineering. But what we need to do is exactly what Patricia said, look for niche programs that are multidisciplinary and take advantage of all that's here and it's substantive. So really excited about that. I made the recommendations in the report. They're pretty, you know, pretty well what the president has said. We know what we're going to need to do this, and we are talking. I've been talking with the new provost now about how we're going to staff this initiative as we go forward. So I don't know if you can tell, but we're pretty excited about this. Questions?
I am, too.
Excellent presentation. Thank you.
Excellent.
Okay.
Questions?
Can you talk about the funding a little bit? Because you mentioned it's going to cost about $20+ million. Will that money come from enrollment or new money from the state or SUNY? How is that being funded?
TBD.
Yeah. We have to be realistic, and we have to recognize that engineering is a very, very expensive endeavor. Notice, when I gave you those four things, what did we throw out right away? Mechanical and civil, because they're no beyond our reach. But the niche engineering programs... The niche engineering programs that we're looking at, there's so much that we have already. So we do have faculty. It's a matter of adding a certain number of faculty, adding some new courses, finding some facilities. That's going to be so much more cost-effective than starting from scratch and trying to compete with engineering schools that have had those programs, you know, for 100 years. So we think that we can get out there with cutting-edge programs that capitalize on the grand challenges and will attract things. Strong emphasis in our program, part of our mission, to work with gender equity and underrepresented groups. And I think the university is the place for women and minorities to come to study engineering because it offers so much more than just that hardware piece.
And there are NIST grants to actually for exactly that purpose. Working with one down in Virginia.
Well, let's talk.
There's definitely, they have programs both for engineering and for the sciences, the NSF, to encourage women and minorities and so forth to go into and disadvantaged. Yep. Really
underrepresented.
And in fact, some of you may not know this, but one of the many boards or committees I sit on is something called CEOS. It's the Committee on Equal Opportunity in Science and Engineering, which is a congressionally appointed committee within NSF that has responsibility for advancing more people from low socioeconomic background, more
right.
women and people with disabilities is,
sure.
has been added to that mix now. In fact, that's where I was supposed to have been yesterday and the day before, but I did it by teleconferencing. But it's looking at this whole issue, and with the, it goes back to the demographic shifts that really is going to help drive how we think about where our students are going to come from in the future. And I think science and technology is a very good example of that, and that's why we've been deeply involved in trying to close the achievement gap, because with the changing demographics that we talked about earlier, and with the growing number of people from low social economic background that are going to be representative of the college going population, unless we find a number of ways to get those folks better prepared to be successful in, to graduate from high school first and then to go on to college, and you've got to find some way to use programs like this to steer and get their interest into these science and technology careers. And I think the fact that they are multidisciplinary is going to make them much more attractive
right.
to a lot of
That's
young people
what I think
than
too.
Just
it's
a pure...
It's showing people what their
absolutely,
options really are.
Absolutely. Yep. So we're very excited about it.
I'm going to move us along. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
2015 legislative agenda.
I'll just redirect it down here so that that works. I'm going to pass these, and this is a draft document that we're still trying to finalize. So state fiscal, we're in state fiscal year 2015-16 at the state level. The document that I just sent around, the three areas that, that I'll talk to, is we're asking to, President Jones talked about the new emergency college, homeland, and cybersecurity. So that was fantastic news. There was $15 million in a reappropriation from last year that would go in capital support for that. To $15 million wouldn't build, you know, we talk about it building an underwhelming building. So we wanted to go to our delegation and ask for additional money, $15 million. We're also, while we're asking our delegation for this money, we are also talking to the governor's office about this idea of moving the ETEC building, and there's a lot of good synergies there, and putting that building on the Harriman property. So we're just kind of hitting this on both fronts. It's obviously, if we could get both, that would be terrific, because that could help us build out the building even more. So that's the first That's the first of our priorities. The second is we do not have, with the separation with Nano, we no longer have a NiStar Center of Excellence. So one of the areas that we feel is well positioned to be a NiStar Center of Excellence is our atmospherics and environmental sciences. So we're looking to for that designation and starting with some seed funding of $250,000. There are 10 centers of excellence around the state, and those centers get a little bit under $1 million a year right now. I think they get $872,000. We ask for that seed funding, and we'd ask our delegation to advance that. Once we get that, we would ask to, in subsequent years, to go up. This will help us as we position ourselves on the federal level for other money, and I'll get back to that. And then the third item on this is an update on the downtown community revitalization. And President Jones had also talked about this, the Schuyler building that we bought several years ago. Last year, we got $4 million from the legislature for design work. And we're going through the process right now of what we might put in that building. And one of the ideas is a school of engineering or a school of engineering and applied science. So at this point, we're talking to the legislature, just thanking them for the $4 million that we got last year, talking to them about the work that that Anne-Marie is doing, and just talking about that possibility of being we the same. The delegation has been very receptive, thinks that's very, very good news, and we'd be very supportive. We also are talking about there's more and more something called makerspace. It's space, and we have it in Troy, the Center of Gravity. That type is where students come together to work with 3D printers, and it's really just a creative space to be together in all types of endeavors. When I went around the campus and asked for input for our legislative priorities, our School of Computing and Information Sciences they have makerspace on campus. They asked for us to go and ask for additional money to expand that. We started to talk to them about, what if we put that on our downtown campus and create a good buzz for a school of engineering in the future? So that's kind of where we're talking about maybe those kind of synergies. So I also talked to you about that in this document. On the federal side, we really want to complement the work and what we're talking to our state delegation at the federal level. So when it comes to emergency preparedness school, we're hoping that in April, when SUNY has its DC days on April 15th and 16th, that we would be able to have a meeting with Jay Johnson, who's the head of the Division of Homeland Security at the federal level, and start to talk about what our expertise is and the exciting new venture with the new College of Emergency Preparedness. We're also looking at, when we talk about the NiStar Center and pitching for that for atmospherics, we're also talking at the federal level for positioning ourselves for a NOAA Center of Excellence or a cooperative institute, so that helps us. And then the RNA Institute, we're talking with NIST about a Center of Excellence in RNA technology and measurement standards. And as you'll see in the kind of the post-earmark world, the way that you position yourself at the federal level is to look for opportunities as designations as centers of excellence, and then the funding follows in that fashion. At this point, we have had a series of meetings with our delegation. President Jones met with our delegation in January. We're going back this week and meeting with some members of our delegation, and then Senator LaValle, who's Senate Higher Education Chair, and Assembly Member Glick, who's the Assembly Chair, to talk not only about our priorities, but also when this is finalized, the back of this will be the state university system priorities, and within those, we will also talk about looking for additional money for critical maintenance. Our needs on the campus are great, as they are across the system. The executive budget came out with $200 million in capital support, which was, very little compared to what the ask and the needs are. The system is asking for $400 million additional. For us, that means right now in the executive budget, we have about $10.4 million. We would, if we got the extra $400 million for the system, that would be another $20 million for us. We are not, we keep pitching to have a five-year capital plan because that helps us so much in planning. We are not, we don't have that at this point. But traditionally, within a five, if we got ourselves to $30 million, that would put us in the in that what traditionally would be a five-year plan. We're also asking for SUNY investment funds for money to support individual programs, scaling access programs, completion programs, success programs. So there's $18 million in the budget for those type of programs. We're looking for another $32 million at the system. They're also looking for money, $10 million for a Master Innovators Program, so we're supporting that ask. And then when it comes to SUNY 2020, this is a plan that passed in 2011 that has allowed for that rational tuition and also is connected to some capital monies. We're asking for an extension of that. That program or that authorization for that program will end next year. So we're trying to lay the foundation for it and then get out and tell the stories of how we've used that money. So I'll be sharing with you very soon those talking points about how what we've done with those funds, and you know, we'll look for your support in continuing and extending that in the future. The EOP program, the Educational Opportunity Program, is a very good program. That program was cut in the executive budget in the traditional way that the legislature adds money to the opportunity programs and the governor cuts them so that the legislature has to come back and buy those back. That has happened again this year to the EOP program, so we're supportive of that that program getting that restoration and just and being supportive of that program. It's a terrific program, and we have about 600 students in that program at the University of Albany. And then we're also asking for base costs, so collective bargaining. We're missing about $7 million, so we're always in that conversation of saying to the legislature, can you help us where the money wasn't in the executive budget? But that's, at this point, we're in an environment where we've had on-time budget for the last 4 years. That was, you know, when I started in the legislature back in 2001, we didn't, you know, we were there till August, September, October as staff, and I fear that this might be a year that we return to that. As you might have seen, the executive budget has, they have 30 days to amend their budget. The 30-day amendments gave you a picture of a legislature and a governor that are not in lockstep. And with that, you know, there's everybody's, you know, what's the odds of an on-time budget? And a lot are saying maybe 60-40. And some of that will, what is the tolerance of the legislature to stay in town with so much discussion about ethics and the Moreland Commission and the change in leadership. So we'll be watching all that, but there's a lot to navigate. As I had asked before, where you could be supportive of, we are circulating letters on Homeland Security saying, looking for our delegation and our community to support UAlbany as the leader of that college, because it is not, because there was so much interest from other areas of the state in being that leader in that hub and spokes model, where we just want to make sure that we galvanize our support if there are efforts that we're hearing that might try to redirect that somewhere else. So we're doing that, and where you could be helpful there. And then on the Albany Law side, we're also looking for support as we go to the Board of Trustees, because there's also always conversations regionally. So I don't know if you have any questions.
Well, I appreciate that, and I would strongly encourage you to use us as you need to. I think that we can be helpful as long as we're speaking from the same script. I think it, you know, that's one of the roles that I think we can play effectively in a win-win environment. So, and I'm going to preface this next comment by saying that this is way operational, and I shouldn't even make the comment, but the update of the downtown community, the Schuyler building, is that for renovation? Is that specifically designated as renovation?
The $4 million that we got $4 million last year for design and start for the renovation, and it can't be used for another purpose.
That was to stabilize the building, Michael.
Well, the other purpose I was thinking was to raise the building.
No.
Well, I'm glad you made that comment in New York, not all.
It's landmark.
Yeah, it is going to cost us so much.
We should never have bought it if we just built our own building.
And we're talking about putting state-of-the-art in it. But anyway, I'm done. Next time,
you got it.
I think everybody on the floor would be happy to whatever. You know, if you send us the letters, we'll send them in. But you know, I think the foundation board's meeting next week. I'm sure they would do the same thing. There's probably other, I don't know what you want to call them, groups like us around the campus. That
advisory committees.
Yeah. And maybe Tim through the Alumni Association could drum up some. I mean, I think we should flood these people, including if you tell us who. I mean, we'll write to our own legislators and say, you know what, I live in down here, but I care about what happens up here. You know, something like that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So, all that support, you're right. I think we need to show our strength and that we care about the University of Albany, where we're on multiple fronts, and with these ideas and the new energy, it's always, unfortunately, it's a threat to some others, and we have to be strong and galvanized against that.
If there is nothing else, was that a question on the phone or no?
Yes, this is Mark Egan. I guess my question, or maybe my concern, is I know because our university is so large, because our campus was built all at one time, we have some unique needs. But I guess the concern that I have is, so let's look at the Capital Region delegation. And I'm not talking just Albany, I'm talking the you know, multi-county region. If all of a sudden one member of our delegation was approached by the second floor or Department of Ed or someone and said, what's UAlbany's top priority? I'm not sure if they could answer that question. You know, we just heard Sheila give us a report, and we touched on how many different things we want funding for. And I know we want funding for all of those. I just don't know if we have our hand out in too many spots all at the same time, or you know, how, and again, I'm just asking this as a question. And I guess if it is, we have to be in all these spots because we have so many needs, and we have so many colleges we have to make sure we represent within the university. How, if I was an elected official, how do I know how to navigate all these projects?
And I guess my response to that, Mark, is that, this is Sheila, we are actually, when we're talking to our delegation, the request, particularly of someone like Senator Amador, who's our new senator, and he's in the majority in the Senate, is to support us with the NiStAR Center of Excellence. He has the ability to help us to push that, and then he on the capital side, we're there hasn't been a terrific amount of capital given to higher education, and we know that there was the settlement, the bank settlement monies were divided up in a lot of areas. We think in the end that higher education will get more of a carve out than it has. And we need that voice within that carve out. And then that's where we stepped up with Homeland at this point, because it is more gelled than School of Engineering and Schuyler. And we just got the $4 million. We're moving along with that. So really, those are the two main asks. On the Albany Law School, it is a beginning. You will see when you see the letter of support, all it is saying that we're asking for your support to have further discussions with Albany Law. So I don't, and I agree.
And I agree. No money.
Yeah, it's not it's not a money ask at this point. So I think that those, and I think it will be helpful, you know, and I apologize in that I need to get out this material to all of you, and I will hopefully next week. Because we'll be handing it out to our legislative delegation next week, and then we'll also be 2020 is again laying a foundation for next year. But really, I don't think we're on too many fronts. It just seems that way because some of it is not an ask,
but kind of an update or a laying of laying of, of an argument into the future.
In fact, Mark, in our visits to the delegation, the kind of common response was, is that all you're asking for? Because we're only asking for the NiStAR Center of Excellence and the...
And the homeland.
And the homeland, and then the capital.
And the critical
maintenance. So it might seem like a lot, but that's really all we're asking for out of this legislative session.
But I think to the point, the communication packet that you put together, so that we're all speaking from the same script, makes all the sense. Yeah. Fantastic.
And this is Leanne, Mark. I would say the president has put a very aggressive vision out there, and we are driving as hard as we can on as many fronts as possible to make that a reality as fast as possible. And there is a lot of track that we have to lay, which is why we brought Sheila on board, and which is why we actually doubled down in government relations and also hired Barbara Lee Steigerwald, who's now been with us for a month. We need a 1-2 punch. This university is waking up, and there are people and entities and organizations that have been happy that we've been on the sideline and we're not there anymore. So we are very aggressive. This is a lot, but I don't see any of these as being particularly optional right now.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, if there's nothing else, thank you. Overview of university digital platform and strategies.
All right, good afternoon. This is Chris Hale. For those of you on the phone, I'm going to switch my seat as well. So many of the things that I think have come up in the discussion this afternoon will make a nice segue for this particular topic. It was interesting before we started the meeting to see how many devices, how all of us were calling,
checking.
I got some more. Maybe some of you are going to buy one later today or this weekend. How we're all using so many different devices to get information, to consume it, to prepare it, to distribute it, and that's certainly a big part of all the initiatives that have been talked about today. What we wanted to bring you up to date on is an effort that, in the we here is Leanne and myself, we are the co-executive sponsors of an initiative co-led by our divisions to do a whole redevelopment, replenishment, and reinvestment of our strategy for the presentation and consumption of information, the presentation of the university and all its manifestations. We've had a web presence for decades. We've had a web presence. We've been active on social media. We've been using all of the tools that have been available over the last couple of generations of technologies. But we're very much at a juncture, programmatically, I would say, strategically and technologically, that we need to take both a fresh look and do some reinvestment. We have many tools in the toolbox that are state-of-the-art and that are working well, but we know we have some tools that need some sharpening as well, and we probably have some new tools that we need to acquire on the technology side. But we also know that a part of this effort is, only part of it is the actual technology. The other effort has everything to do with our communication strategy, our branding, our messaging, and I will yield to my colleague for some comments on that. But I'll just say why do we need to take a look at this, especially at this time? And I think we would both say it really does go to the core of all of our strategic direction. We know our perspective and our current students consume information in different ways. We know that how they're interacting with information from Albany is through small and medium-sized devices, as well as potentially what we've done, larger desktop devices. We need to make sure our messages are effective across all of those platforms and not spotty or not different messages in different platforms or the absence of a message. So we know that the investments in this area are critical for our admissions strategy. I think we would say they are critical for our advocacy strategy that Sheila talked about. They're critical for our teaching and learning strategy as we have more and more of our instruction that even if it's not occurring online, which more and more of it is, all of the supporting documents, spreadsheets, videos, etc., are all depending on this kind of overall infrastructure. So it's important for our teaching and learning strategy. And last but not least, I think for our daily business and operational strategy. I mean, we all know how we work is so dependent on being able to get to our work anytime, anywhere. I'm sure that's the case in all of your professions and day jobs as much as it is ours. So we have, Leanne and I have a co-directors leading up this initiative. It really got going towards the end of last semester with a set of stakeholder meetings, town hall reviews with students, faculty, and staff about what they saw as their needs. All of that information has been, I think, now synthesized, developed during the January-February time period. The work up to now has also included a review of all of our current systems, new vendor products, what's happening at peer institutions, kind of the usual methodology we would use when we're looking to do system investments or replacements. So I think we are expecting a report from our working team very shortly that will propose a multi-year strategy and investment requirements. Hopefully on the investment side, what we will be looking at is where we need to make some investment is more on the one-time transition, one-time and transition investments, so that our current spend in this area can actually be end up being repurposed and won't have to increase, but we'll stay tuned. Obviously, the search that Robert talked about earlier for the Vice President for Communication and Marketing is a very key hire associated with this kind of initiative, and I think I will use that as the handoff to Leanne for whatever other comments she'd like to make.
I guess I would just like to talk a little bit about how this project really speaks to how we need to change some aspects of the culture across campus. We have, I think, had an environment where, well, first of all, this space is becoming so much more crowded than it ever was with the proliferation of devices and programs and platforms and, you know, apps and all this stuff coming at us every day. And in this environment at the university, the experience I think that I'm observing is that any unit anywhere across the institution can make a buy, can obligate the institution to using and supporting any number of different platforms, even though another area of the institution may have a program that does something very similar. And so we need to get our arms around that. We need to decide what is it that we need as an institution and how are we going to have a little bit more of a centralized approach to this so that it can be rational and so that we can have an efficient way of managing all of this, because we can't possibly have an IT services unit that can support anything and everything that's out there. So we have to go through this process of kind of negotiating with our community about what it is we can support and then at what level of service. And so this idea of a service level agreement conversation with our campus is really, really a critical thing that's going to come out of this. Any other comments related to that?
I think that's a very important part. We've had the university website, university-wide services in this area supported by Central IT, but we've also, and I think increasingly in recent years, departments or schools have again been able to make local investments. And again, we find that not only can that have dilution on the content and the brand and messaging, so I assume it leads to confusion in the market about brand and messaging. It often the ability of those departments to support what they invest in initially, there's not a sustainable plan for support of whatever it is they invest in, and that tends to end up.
Support other things.
So it's not enough. It's naturally a less effective and less efficient use of resources. But we need to, as Leanne says, we need to come at that from not from a technology vector. We need to come at that from a culture and I think a communication strategy branding mechanism to get everybody on the same page.
So if just to kind of boil it down, this is the first time you probably said a lot of time paying attention. It sounds like it was a very fractionalized kind of process, current state, if you will, that it's almost like the tail is your department and the heads are all everybody else, and people just running amok from a perspective, I don't mean a pejorative way, but kind of looking at their own business requirements solely for themselves versus collectively and really using you as more of a business partner, kind of we do in the corporate world. So it sounds like it's a sea change or a complete switch in the strategy. I got yelled at Cushman Wakefield, but I became the brand police because I would have a proposal done in New York, I would fly to London, Mumbai, and back home to maybe LA, and every time the same report, I'd get off and I look at it, I'm like, oh, our logo looks different. Oh, that's not the same color. And things you never paid attention to, but when you're trying to drive a strategy of branding and marketing consistency, you spend a lot of money on that purple and the design. It's got to be the same throughout. So I understand that. My only just experience I learned is after I tried to go from a very broken and tried to centralize everything, and we kind of met in the middle somewhere, and SLA is the best way to do it, is just to understand, as you always do, I know, the stakeholders, I always say you guys are 10,000 times smarter than me, I'm just trying to catch up to you, but let me be the dumb guy and bring me in, so I was able to kind of win them on my side to help try to push things forward, that you just allow some flexibility, I already know you know this, just to allow them to be able to do some of this stuff so they have some of their bespoke needs. It might be a little bit different than what the mothership may want, but to the extent we can do that, that would be great.
And I would say, that's a hallmark of the academic culture anyway, but the pendulum has swung too far out to the decentralized end on.
There's a hole in the fence, and the sheep have been running away. So we need to fix the fence.
We need to have a centralized unit that has the expertise, but an understanding of how that unit collaborates with the academic units across campus to help them achieve and deliver what it is that they need to do.
Will you control the spend also? Is that your? I retract that question. That's okay. I didn't ask it. Let it go. Sorry.
We've had some of units that have done different web things, different branding pieces, but I think what we are seeing coming out of all the stakeholder interaction in the November December timeframe, that we have really tapped into something though, tapped into a readiness across the entire university, academic and administrative, that I think everybody, the majority are ready to do this. Because I think even where units have, wanted to do their different branding thing, in terms of getting platforms and tools where they can do that, again, across the myriad devices and all the different social media aspects, they haven't been able to tackle that part successfully. So even if they were kind of feeling successful about one aspect of of their own spend and their own messaging, they haven't been able to tackle some of these other things. So I think we've tapped into a recognition that there's really, the pendulum needs to come back. And if we're going to be successful in any of this, we have to be successful as a team, as a university team.
Agreed. A couple of really quick comments, the first of which is this is completely in your purview, so we really don't have a dog in this race, which is, you brought it out, so it's fun to talk about. Every organization, growing organization, has dealt with this issue. We certainly have, you have, but specifically on the IT side, the good news there is that in that we're a little bit behind, there's an awful lot of best practices that are that I'm sure you guys have already dealt with that take you through that process. The one comment that you made that scares me a little bit, and again, you don't have to comment to it because I know what you think. I'd love us to look at this particular function as if we were a business, because we are a business. And I think if you look at it that way, then yes, you have to be a team, but you have to be the standard setters. You have to provide the boundaries. And sometimes if you let that pendulum go all the way to the academic side, it can be chaos. But that's just a personal observation. I know this is your guys' game. Anybody have anything else before I move this?
Just a quick question. Are there other universities around the country that have actually mastered this process that you can look to for guidance?
Well, it's certainly a part of the team's assignment is to do a peer analysis, and they've done that. I have to say I don't know exactly which ones they're identifying as leaders, but okay. That's a part of what they're doing.
Good.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. For the next item on the agenda, I'd like to do this by introducing a motion to get it on the table. This is the amendment to the community rights and responsibilities. So would someone make that motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, with that on the table, please feel free.
Hi, again, I'm Janet Thayer. I'm an associate counsel at SUNY Albany. If I could just take 60 seconds of your time to introduce one of the most exciting hires I think we've had in terms of assisting the university and coordinating. You're so important, and we know that. It's critical. But the University at Albany, let me start with this. We cannot pick up a newspaper, a magazine, turn on the radio, a news program, a talk show without hearing about sexual violence on college and university campuses. Both President Jones and Leanne found it to be so important that we've been able to hire a full-time Title IX coordinator, Chantel Cleary, who's sitting over here. We're very excited to have her. She's been with us for 7 weeks, and she has hit the ground at more than a running pace. It's incredible. Chantel comes to us very well qualified. She has been she's an experienced attorney as well as a public servant in New York State. She was, during law school, a legal assistant to the Manhattan County DA's office. Then she went to Clinton County to prosecute felonies. Fortunately, she came to Albany County and was supervisor of prosecuting felony cases, most particularly sexual assault in the Special Victims Unit. She also, as part of that, not only prosecuted cases, but collaborated within the community for resources for the victims and families. She is also an alum of SUNY, getting her undergraduate degree from Binghamton, and she's also an Albany Law School graduate. She came to us 7 weeks ago, and she hit the ground running, as I said, starting by coordinating all of the university resources that we have for responding to sexual violence. She is coordinating investigations, if not leading them, rewriting campus policies, developing a very comprehensive interactive website, and leading the charge with training for both faculty, staff, and students. She also has some terrific ideas for community engagement. Again, as part of the DA's office, she was out in the community and would like to see some collaboration with the community there. She also has done some amazing work getting students involved, including meeting with the Greek organizations already and getting them set up to be part of the training process as well. She's getting the university's message out, a very clear and consistent one to both students, faculty, staff, alumni, donors, and the community in general. So again, I can't say enough, we're very, very pleased to have her here. She's our number one tool in compliance and risk management when it comes to sexual assault prevention and response. To that, the university has a resolution in front of you where we're asking to again amend the community rights and responsibilities, our student code of conduct. These changes come out of the SUNY Board of Trustees and the Chancellor, as well as the federal government, the Violence Against Girls Authorization Act of 1993, as well as the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights. I'll go through it very, very quickly. I know it was in your packet. But back in October 2nd, 2014, the SUNY Board of Trustees, consistent with the leadership of Governor Cuomo, and building upon both what SUNY and the University of Albany had already been doing with respect to sexual violence, passed a resolution requiring the Chancellor within 60 days to develop a comprehensive system-wide action plan for the prevention and response to sexual violence. The Chancellor in turn convened a working group that cut across all the SUNY lines, SUNY colleges, including the community colleges and members of the community, to put together this plan that was adopted, or I should say approved, by the Chancellor on December 1. So that is part of what the changes are in the code. The second part, again, is the Violence Against Women Act, VAWA, which requires colleges and universities to adopt specific provisions regarding sexual misconduct. And then, again, OCR has required, through its interpretation of Title IX, certain changes that we made. So very quickly, the definitional section, the SUNY plan, the Chancellor's plan requires us to add a new definition of affirmative consent. VAWA requires new definitions for proceedings and results. VAWA also requires that we add to prohibited conduct dating violence, domestic violence, and stalking, including cyber stalking. The SUNY plan requires new student conduct procedures for sexual misconduct cases. One of them is we have to do a no contact order. Please know SUNY Albany has always had in its code a provision for no contact order. We still have that in our main code, but then we also have it here, so it's very specific to sexual assault. We decided to do it that way, one, to be consistent with what the Chancellor wanted, but also for clarity in the code itself, so that anyone who is reading the code is not picking through sections if they're seeing a specific section on sexual violence and thinking that that's it. The other is the authority of the administration to temporarily suspend students. Again, we have already had that in our code, but now we have it in two places, our general section and then the specific section for misconduct. We also have a newly redrafted section on just specific to cases of sexual misconduct. Frankly, it tracks large measure of what we've already been doing, but instead of having both ourselves and the council pick through different phrases and things like that, we're asking the council to just revoke our section in its entirety and just add again the SUNY plan. Again, it tracks almost very close to what we've already been doing. OCR, you may recall that back in 2010 through 2013, the SUNY system was subject to a compliance audit. Again, we did very well in it, both as a system and as our own campus. But OCR is interpreting Title IX to require us to have an efficient process from the time of complaint through investigation and resolution. They are put on in a time frame of 60 days. So we're asking that we have that again put in our code. By the way, the SUNY policy, the administrative policy for addressing sexual harassment, which does include, again, sexual violence, we have that 60-day provision already in that code. A very minor amendment to the appeals section. We're trying to be sure that we're consistent in all of our terms, and instead of referring to sexual misconduct, harassment, and violence, we now call it sexual misconduct, a term that has been defined further up in the code. And then, of course, just as a catch-all, we ask, in case we have missed something, would that, you know, search replace, if we've
gotten somewhere else and we're able to just go in without coming back to you again. It's going to be things like is versus are, sexual misconduct versus sexual violence, that kind of thing. So that we're again, all of these amendments are before you in order for the university's community rights and responsibilities to be in compliance with both the SUNY plan for prevention and response to sexual violence, the federal VAWA, and OCR's interpretation. Just a couple of other really quick things just to give you more context in case you hear about it. President Johns has to report to the Board of Trustees, to the Chancellor by March 31st, and the Chancellor then has to report to the Board of Trustees as to what every college and university within the SUNY system has done to be in compliance with its October resolution. There are some other parts of that resolution that the campus is working on, including training, which again, Chantel is taking the lead on. Some of the other component parts are already in effect, pursuant to the board and the chancellor's approval, and we will be briefing the president's executive committee at the earliest convenience of that committee's agenda. As you can probably appreciate, much like yourself, their agendas are always very, very full. Just one more minute. The SUNY plan is actually the backbone of Governor Cuomo's proposed legislation for addressing sexual violence on college campuses, which is expected to be part of his budget bill. Also, SUNY itself, along with members of the administration at SUNY Albany, have been part of, again, the Chancellor's Working Group. We've also participated in President Obama's initiative, that campaign, It's On Us. And it's actually we're all currently working with Senator Jovan and other senators on a bipartisan Campus Accountability and Safety Act. And in fact, today came out a new draft with SUNY comments in it. I'll be very honest with you, technology is great, but trying to read that on a cell phone, I couldn't really read the red lines very well. So I won't bore you with those details at this point. But any questions, comments, concerns?
From a governance standpoint, this is not debatable. So it is not that I don't disagree with it, but it's not.
The only question, and just I have kind of two, one more of a statement. We don't affect any of the due process, you know, innocent, I mean, all whatever we had before is still, so we had that discussion, John, about something else in the past. I don't remember what it is, but I just remember that. I forgot the second one, but as long as that's there, yeah, absolutely. It's got to be. Get tighter.
And I can tell you, too, this is such a changing environment. We'll probably be back to you with other changes to the code as different legislation is passed, both statewide and federally. And also as there are some lawsuits pending, both on the federal level and within New York State, about how campuses are responding to this and the judicial codes. So we'll keep you posted. But again, we probably will be back with additional changes.
Other comments? Motions on the table, in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, passed unanimously. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have a couple of what should be very quick motions with respect to naming. The first one is the naming of the Masry Center for Business and a $5.25 million they've been named.
Absolutely. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I know it took a long time to
get
it.
Let's get that motion on the table. Would someone move, please?
I'll move.
Second. Any discussion on that part in there? It is worth it.
I just would like this to remain as confidential as possible for now, and we are planning to have a ceremony. Probably we're looking at June 12th right now, and for announcing the name space.
All right. There's no discussion on it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The person? Or passed unanimously. The second naming, the ARC Group of New York, with another naming motion, the ARC Group of New York Incident Response Lab. Would somebody make that motion?
Michael, just one. If you pay close attention to this naming is only for 2 years. it was actually brought up at one of the meetings here, naming spaces, you know, permanently. We went and looked at, this is something just starting across not-for-profit area. The philanthropic gifts usually, has always, the naming was permanent. Mm-hmm. Now we see more and more in the, for the corporate, on the corporate side, even the philanthropic gifts, they have their term limits to them. So we approached this gift with a limited time for naming. And it worked well, and I believe going forward, this is one option that we're going to be pursuing to put a limited time for naming of the spaces for philanthropic gifts. So that's why you see a limited time for this.
And in that same discussion was the issue that we have as part of our agreement with them, the unilateral right to take their name off. We feel as though yes. there is a damage to our reputation.
Actually, there was a space that the famed accounting firm had, Arthur Anderson, and we moved that a while back.
Can we have a motion on this one?
So moved.
Second. Pat.
Yep.
Okay, is there any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, election of officers. Steve Hilton.
Well, we at the fall meeting in September, we passed a resolution moving the election of officers from the last meeting of the academic year to the first meeting of the new academic year, so that a new student appointee, if interested, could throw his or her name in the hat. But we ran out of time to have that election.
Shocker.
So last time around, Pat Colwell was elected secretary, and Pierre Ulrich was elected in effect vice chair. Pierre, that office is vacant since Pierre is no longer on the board. So we really have two offices up for election again.
Do we really need to have officers? I mean,
that's a good question.
See, it goes to the whole thing about the statute. There's absolutely no provision whatsoever.
And I can say, as secretary, I've done absolutely nothing.
Well, you know, you've done it well.
that's because you have a good note taker.
I was going to say,
you're darn good at it.
I can excel at nothing.
The president of the council is appointed by the governor.
Right. Okay,
yeah. So.
Yes.
You're
the only one
that
can really do anything. The rest of us.
So, we can have, even if we were to appoint someone, to stand in, we have no authority to do that.
Right.
So, I think we would be on somewhat shaky ground. If, I hit the lottery and moved to Brazil, I would assume that the council could then appoint somebody pending the governor bring somebody
yes.
up. But
yeah, we had a vice chair for many, many years when Dan was here.
That was because George was then transitioning.
Right, right. Well, what happened is, you didn't move to Brazil, but...
And that was because he was, just like I am, a senior person
right.
on the committee by a few...
I mean, it was dealt with, I
right.
guess.
He became the convener.
Right.
The convener, yes.
But it wasn't an elected thing.
No.
No. It was simply...
He was like a few weeks older, or not older, but more senior than me.
Yeah,
and
it was...
He was named to that spot for George. I'm just saying...
No, you're the only senior here.
No, it's not that. It's just that there isn't anything at all that requires
right.
this. Nor
right.
is that person...
Well, it's not
provided.
Nor have I found that it... I mean,
it's not
that was my...
It's not the bylaws. Yeah. Right?
When we drafted the bylaws, we had looked at other...
You could amend the bylaws.
I guess bylaws are for the council, and these positions were there. So even though there was no statutory basis for it, other council had done it, so I would say there's precedent for doing so.
It just doesn't seem to serve much purpose most of the time.
And to be honest with you, I think Mike's view, which I support, of trying to get us to have more interaction with the university is more important than this kind of stuff.
I agree.
And I would rather spend time on that and focusing on that and working with President Jones on that than I would caring about who has the title. That's just my view.
I'm in. Well, that's why I brought the question up.
Is there anyone?
I want a title.
I have.
You know what? I'm happy to give you my secretarial functions.
This ends quickly with if no one is interested in making a motion, then we move to the next item on the agenda.
Okay. One thing I would like us to think about, and this came up earlier when we talked about Skylar a few meetings back, and the idea that perhaps we could have, at the time, instead of going and acquiring the high school, if we had needed space, looked at a private solution of some sort. And in thinking about some of our space needs and, you know, I was listening today, you know, all of our requests and so forth. I think we need to always be thinking about is there an alternate approach or a private approach? And Fardeen, I don't want to lay too much on you, but even a matching approach where we could say, you know what, we'll raise X if you give us Y, but we're going to do it on, you know, maybe not on state property. Or maybe on state, I don't know. I think we need to be. We're going to need to be more open and flexible, and we should always keep that in the back of our minds.
Yeah. Well, it's horse out of the barn, water over the dam now related to Skylar.
Skylar's done.
But Skylar is a complicated issue because.
Stop bringing that up. Huh? Just twitch every time you say it. I'm sorry.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot, but you have to understand the dynamics of a building that essentially, for all practical purposes, is on our campus, and then the possible scenario of going for a purpose that wasn't congruent with being next door to a university was part of the optic, and the other part of it is a historic building that you can't tear it down if you wanted to. That's so it's right. Not going
anywhere. And I'm not suggesting that, and it's sunk. It's done.
Yes.
It's done.
And we know that the cost.
We're talking about this E-Tech thing, and if we have $15 million, you know, $15 million with a little matching funds could actually build not an underwhelming building, but a pretty nice building if it's done privately in Albany as opposed to done publicly, you know, in that through the whole SUNY constructions and so forth.
Right, you know, through the foundation side of the house is where
I'm always this. Willing to take a $15 million from it.
Well, I bet you're going to find though that $15 million is subject to SUGOV approval, and as we go through that whole process, it has to be bidded out appropriately.
Well, that's my.
It's not outside. It's not a prep. It's not an off balance sheet financing. No, it's not.
I understand that it isn't. All I'm saying is, as we think of our space needs and so forth, that we could look into private approaches.
No, you're absolutely right.
And I love that Albany Law is going to stay a 501(c).
At least during this interim thing.
They would be crazy to give that up.
We may, first time that you and I may disagree on something.
It can work within the system.
Yeah, but you can utilize it.
There are precedent situations where you will have both.
I understand. That's how you get around the SUGOV issue.
Yep.
Because you pull them in, and then you can do that. Just like
that's exactly.
Now it's
We still have the same end result. Preserve our flexibility.
Their 501(c)(3) could be absorbed to our foundation.
Absolutely.
So we still have a 501(c)(3), and that's one.
Well, that's almost a given. So, yeah, under that scenario, I'm all in with you, Pat.
Yeah, no, trust me, we are on the same page.
I want to move us to the agenda page. We are on to items that go to the order, and we do want to, it was done previously, but we do want to recognize Jim Clancy for his service on the Vice President of Communication and Marketing search. I think it was great that we were asked to appoint a person from the council to be part of that, and I think that gets to the further integration that we do with our role and with that of the university. So we're pleased with that, and if it goes bad, then we can just blame Jim. So I'd like somebody to blame that.
You guys won't be the first.
We do want to remember for the record, and I don't want to mess up this last name, but Richard
Heft.
Richard was a former council member who passed away, so we recognize him in the minutes. move to the question of summer meeting? Do you want to just...
Sure. The statute requires that we meet four times a year. And we had four scheduled, but we had to cancel the December meeting due to scheduling conflict. So in order to remain in compliant with the statute, we need to do schedule one more meeting before the beginning of the next academic year. And we've had some informal discussions at prior meetings about, are we limited to meeting only during the academic year? No, we're not. Now we happen to need a fourth meeting, one during the summer at some point in time, as opposed to trying to cram one in between now and May, which just wouldn't make any sense from an agenda point of view. So I suggested to Michael that we can throw that on the table.
Right. We'd like some thoughts that there was some discussion about it. If we did do that, what would be the appropriate month? Let's put it this way, is there any objection to a summer meeting to 60%? Well, we will work on the logistics of that.
I can get some if we think that a Friday is a good day to meet, you know, you can look for an email from me, and we'll see, you know, where we can get you know, as much participation as we possibly can, and we'll try to pick a good date.
Council engagement was the other item that was under the good of the order, and again, I just want to keep that on the table as something that we want to constantly be aware of and improve. So the council is engaged in what's happening at the university, that you feel that you're engaged, not because we are making things up to be engaged with, but that we truly have a role. And I know that President Jones is, and I are on the same page with respect to this. So we are constantly looking for those opportunities, like the involvement in the search and other things, so that we make sure that this is an action-oriented body and that we make a difference, that we are relevant to the university. The last thing I just want to bring up, and this was up higher on the agenda, but I just go with me on this. I think we need to be very careful, so we want to take our direction on the issue of communication and lobbying, who we talk to and how we talk to them. You know, when something is in the governor's budget, I think we want to have direction from our professional staff and our lobbyists on whether we should ever go against the governor's budget. And for those of you that are inside the baseball stadium, that's a very dangerous thing to do if you are signing on as a representative of the council. So I just want to remind everybody to make sure that we take a very specific direction on those topics from our professional staff, because there are a lot of people in Albany that are watching, listening to how people act and react, and to publicly go against the governor can hurt the institution. So just a reminder. Anybody have anything else?
Michael, could I say additional item?
Sure.
Go ahead, Tim.
I just wanted to remind you that my term as president of the Alumni Association ends on May 3rd. So at your next meeting, you'll see a brand new.
So this is your last meeting with us?
I believe so.
Well, if this is your last meeting, we would ask you, if you wouldn't mind, if you would at least join us for the next meeting as well, because we would like to have a little bit different way of thanking you for your long service with us.
I would be happy to do so, and I'll take the opportunity to introduce Joe to everybody at that time.
Fantastic.
Great. The new president is Garba.
Thank Joe you. Garba. He's also in New York City.
Perfect.
Joe Garba.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, man. We're developing a little kind of information here.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anything else? If not, a motion to adjourn?
A move.
Okay.
All righty.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you all. Rye, we've got travel safely.
Thank you, folks on the phone. Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, that's right. I'll let you
stay. We're going to be here forever.
What you need is a car following
Yeah, it was supposed to get voted on at the last Senate meeting, but because of the snowstorm, we didn't have quorum. We couldn't do it, but it will be it's on the agenda for March 9th.
Not that I didn't ever see it.
I'm sure it will pass.
Good. Good.